this and other podcasts are available on the Gun Rights Radio Network, gunrightsradio.com. Podcasting freedom.
Hi folks, Bob Main here with another episode of the Handgun World Show. The reason I carry a gun is because I can't carry a cop. Welcome to episode number 116 of the Handgun World Show. And did you know that I am one self-absorbed yuppie? That's right. At least that's what a commenter on iTunes wrote. Somebody listens to the show. Said that I use the words I, me, and my a lot. Oh, well. You know, everybody has their critics. I just want to remind listeners that this is a practical show. This is a show where I give you my personal experiences and things that I've observed out there. How do I give my personal experiences without using the words I, me, and words like that? Anyway, this show is an interview. And this show is not about me. Especially this episode. This episode, I interviewed a couple people from the shooting range. About a week and a half ago, I shot the Real World Gun shooting match again over at Dallas Pistol Club. And that's a match I really like. One of the reasons why I like it is because you get to load your magazines to full capacity. You get to shoot your gun the way that you carry it. And if you make modifications to it, they don't care. They put all the double-stack guns in one category and all the single-stack guns in another category. So you're competing with guns that are similar to yours and shooters that are shooting those guns. And I like it that way. Okay, and the most important thing I like is that their scoring system. Their scoring system says you have to score 8 points on a target just to neutralize it, which means you got to get two pretty good hits. In other sports like IDPA and USPSA, you don't quite have to be as accurate to neutralize the target as you do in this real-world gun match. And it really screwed me up on one stage. And you'll hear me talk about that in the interview. But anyway, I just want to let you know that I'm not a gunsmith, I'm not ex-law enforcement, I'm not ex-military, and I'm not a firearms trainer, just a regular guy. And as I mentioned, that's what you do. You get just a Yankee with a gun's perspective on this show. So as I head out to one of my first sales calls this morning here, I'm doing this on Wednesday. I'm doing this introduction on Wednesday, even though this interview was done back on 26th of March at a shooting match. I'm heading out to appointment, so I decided to use a little windshield time here while I'm driving my car to give you this intro. So let me kind of set the stage here a little bit for this interview. There are two people that listen to this show, actually three of them, that got a chance to join me. Two of them were planned, and then the other one was unexpected. They all listen to this show. A gentleman named Scott, who also goes by Orklin on the Gun Rights Radio Network forums, and Damien. I'm glad I finally got a chance to meet Damien from Dallas. And he beat me. He's a new shooter, and he beat me on this match, which I'll talk a little bit about here in just a minute. It was a lot of fun to shoot with these guys, and it was a great experience, and I love it when I get a chance to shoot with listeners. And then another guy who I didn't even know, a gentleman named Chris, who's one of Damien's friends, joined us near the second half of the interview, and he had some pretty cool things to say. He didn't actually shoot the match, but he had some pretty cool things to say about competition, because he is a big competition shooter. And you'll also be surprised as to what he says about his concealed carry gun. So let me tell you a little bit about this match. I think it's interesting that every once in a while a new shooter comes out and does real well, and I think that's really cool. I find myself, at least, overanalyzing. Now, here I go, you know, to that listener who says I'm a self-absorbed yuppie. Here I go. I'm going to talk about myself for a minute, but the reason I'm going to talk about myself is because I'm going to share an experience with you, the listener. Still can't figure out what's wrong with that. Anyway, I find myself sometimes getting a little bored out there, I guess. And I haven't been practicing much lately. So I'm not going to make a bunch of excuses. It's just that I haven't been practicing much lately. So Damien, congratulations. You beat me. I had one stage in that match I just totally screwed up. And in this real-world gun match, if you fail to neutralize a target, they assess you a 10-second penalty. Now, I went back and I looked at the scores after this interview that's coming up. I had 5 failures to neutralize on one stage. That was a 50-second penalty. That just killed me. I mean, that just really destroyed my score. And that's why I lost. That's why I lost to Damien, and Scott just blew me away. So I had a bad day at the range, folks. And I really got to start practicing more because the Double Tap Championship's coming up, and I don't want to embarrass myself at the Double Tap Championship. Steve Zoffi's going to be there. Rick Brenneman's going to be there. Probably a lot of big-name shooters will be there. It's a USPSA match. So I've got to get tuned up because I know I can do better than I did a week and a half ago, and you're going to hear about it in the interview, so I'm not going to steal too much material from it. But this is why I encourage all of you to get out and shoot competition matches. If nothing else, competition matches will expose your weakness as a shooter. You know, there's a big argument about whether competition teaches you good habits or bad habits, and I kind of fall in the middle of that. But one of the things, if you're a person that likes to train, and you train in a self-defense manner, in other words, if you're going to some of the big-name schools or even to some of the smaller-name schools, and you're learning how to defend yourself with a handgun, and maybe you're taking 2-day or 3-day courses, what I like about competition shooting is that it exposes what your weaknesses are. And what this match did to me about a week and a half ago, it just simply showed me I haven't been practicing enough. And you'll hear all about it. So let's go ahead and get to the interview. This was at the Real World Gun Match, Dallas Pistol Club. This was about 15 or 20 minutes after we got done shooting. Just a quick sound effect, a little public service announcement here probably from the Gun Rights Radio Network and the United States Concealed Carry Association and so forth. And on the back side of the announcement, we'll go ahead and get started with the interview with Chris and Damien and Scott. Stay tuned.
Come meet national gun rights leaders and your fellow grassroots activists at the 26th Annual Gun Rights Policy Conference in Chicago, Illinois, at the Hyatt Regency Airport Hotel on September 23rd, 24th, and 25th, 2011. This is your once-a-year chance to network and get an insider look and plan pro-gun rights strategies for the coming year. Past GRPCs have outlined victory plans and made public the latest firearms trends. They allow you a first-hand chance to hear movement leaders and make your voice heard. This year, we'll take a look at critical issues such as city gun bans, youth violence, smart guns, concealed carry, federal legislation, legal actions, gun show regulation, state and local activity. We'll also preview the upcoming court cases and revisit the U.S. Supreme Court Heller decision. The full roster of GRPC 2011 speakers has not yet been set. Past speakers include Ellen Gottlieb, Joseph Tartaro, U.S. Representatives Ron Paul, Chris Cannon, Bob Barr, and Gene Schmidt, Robert Levy Esquire and Alan Gura Esquire, counsel for the Heller case, Wayne LaPierre, John Lott, D. Gordon Liddy, Michael Reagan, Larry Elder, Ken Hamlin, and many others. Gun Rights Radio Network is a supporter of all the work the Second Amendment Foundation is doing with GRPC. So as a special bonus, the Gun Rights Radio Network hosts will be attending the 2011 GRPC and will be having the first live roundtable discussion. Gun Rights Radio Network needs your help to make this possible. So we are having a gun giveaway. We'll be giving away a new Smith & Wesson M&P 9C handgun to one lucky winner on June 31st, 2011. As an added bonus, everyone who enters the giveaway receives a free copy of Black Man with a Gun by Ken Blanchard just for entering. It's a $16.95 value. So go over to www.gunrightsradio.com/giveaway and enter today. That's www.gunrightsradio.com/giveaway. Also, make sure you go over to www.saf.org and make sure you're registered for the 2011 Gun Rights Policy Conference. Help us make this the biggest and best conference yet.
Let's see here. It's Saturday, March 26th, and we just got done shooting Real World Gun, and I got two shooters and two listeners to the show. I've got Scott. Hi, how's it going, Scott?
Pretty good.
Good, and I got Damien.
Fantastic.
So we did the Real World Gun match on March 26th here at Dallas Pistol Club. Damien, let's start with you. What did you think of the match?
It was not only fun, but very educational. Again, things you can't do at the square range, you're allowed to do here. And when you do screw up, people are real nice and correcting you, and you don't feel like a loser. So that was a big plus for me. So
how'd your Glock 19 Gen 4 run?
It ran great. I put 200 rounds through it prior to coming here. I think we put about 100 rounds through it today. I had one failure to eject, and it's because I limp wristed it. Because I was.
I saw that.
Yeah, I was. I almost got a procedural for not going on the other side of the barricade. So when I transitioned to the other barricade, all I was thinking is get on the other side, get on the other side, and I just relaxed my grip. And I hate to say that, I mean, it almost flipped out of my hand. So I knew something was wrong. And when I looked down, I sure enough, I limp-wristed it, caught the tail end of the casing. But yeah. Other than that, it shot great.
Good, good. So, Scott, what was your favorite stage?
Probably the one with the double flippers.
Yeah, the double. Now, let me explain that. What happened is we had a stage where you draw and you shoot a piece of steel. And as soon as you shoot the piece of steel, two targets actually come down, show themselves to you for about like 1 second, and then disappear. How did you do on that?
I did really good. I hit both targets with a double tap, so got the 8 points necessary. And they don't stay very visible very long.
Did you use your sights?
I don't think I even saw my gun. I was looking straight at the targets to make sure that they were still facing me when that trigger went bang.
I didn't use my sights on that one. It was like basically point shoot.
That's what
you had to point shoot on that, because if you use your sights, it's too late. Mm-hmm. You know, the target's gone. And what I like is I like that that simulates it. It forces you to not use your sights and just learn to shoot by feel.
Mm-hmm. First one was what, about 4 yards, and the other one was probably about 10 yards out.
4 yards and 10 yards. That's about right.
And it was nice. That was fun. I like to do that sort of thing more often.
What'd you think, Damien?
I don't even know if I hit him because I wasn't paying attention to anything. People were, you know, the scores and all that. I don't even know how I did overall. I think I hit it.
It doesn't matter, though. I mean, this was, you know, you're still new at this.
Yeah, I'm
who cares
out here,
about the score?
I'm not out here competing with all the guys out here. I was out here kind of just getting better and training a little bit. But I think I hit both.
I think Bob
knows what I did more than I did, because I was just glad to get through each stage without, like, shooting my arm off. But no, I thought that was real fast. I mean, in a real-world scenario, is almost thinking like a guy peeking around a corner and peeking back within a second. So it was a pretty good drill, faster than I ever thought. You know, when they showed us a demo how fast it was, I was like, I'll never hit that.
But you did, though. I know you did. I know you got at least one hit on each one of those targets.
Okay. So and you don't aim. I mean, I just, like I said, I was just staring at the targets, and my arms were extended towards them. That's all I remember, because I shot. Yep. You have to shoot fast.
Yeah, you do.
So it was a really good drill.
Scott, you shot your Taurus 24/7, right?
Yes, I did.
How did it run?
Excellent. Had it for about 2 years, probably 3,000 rounds through it, and only had one little problem with it, and that was with the slide release lever. But other than that, it's been a great gun.
And I get to borrow it.
Yeah, give Bob a chance to do a review on it.
I am. I'm going to shoot it. I'll probably shoot it at the square range next weekend and do a little review on it and kind of throw some opinions in there. I think I like the way you got it set up, and it ran fine.
And
I
mean, don't feel like you have to be nice or any or sugarcoat anything. Give me true, honest review
of it. I will. But, you know, I think this is the second or third time I've seen you shoot it.
Mm-hmm.
And I've never seen you have one problem with it.
It's been a great gun.
And it's, in fact, you kicked my fanny on two stages. So, you know, you have one piece of junk plastic pistol, and I have another piece of junk plastic pistol. And sometimes those pieces of junk plastic, they do pretty well, don't they?
Yeah, they do.
What do you think, Damien?
I think the Glock is one of the best guns out there, but that's my... I like anything that has gunpowder, but the thing about the Glock, it felt good in my hand. I was able to shoot it well. I like other guns.
I'm being facetious, because everybody calls them piece of junk polymer pistols.
They're,
you know?
They're fantastic.
Inaccurate, junky. And you know what? I was shooting my G19 today with my stock sights, and the Glock sights didn't really hurt me too much at all. Now, I want to ask you again about your Gen 4, because there's a lot of people that are really down on those. Your Gen 4 G19 has the 04 spring.
Correct.
You've got about how many rounds through it now?
Only 300.
300 rounds, and all you've had is one failure to eject, which was today, and that was probably your fault.
I guarantee you it was my fault. Because I literally, the gun felt like it almost snapped out of my hand. So, again, I was thinking about...
You didn't have a good enough grip.
I was thinking about not getting a procedural and not the grip on my gun. Which, again, this is part of the reason you're here to learn.
Yep.
But no, the spring, I don't feel any difference, really, between the Gen 3. I carried a Gen 3 for many months. I really don't feel a difference. The biggest difference for the Gen 4 for me was the short frame, because my hands are small. And the mag release button's bigger. I like that, and the grip. the texture on the gun. But it ran fine. As long as you do your job, the gun will do its job. So.
Now, I shot your Gen 4 G19, and I didn't notice any difference in the trigger between that and the Gen 3. But yours is well broken in also. Well, I mean, you got a few hundred rounds through it before I shot it.
Yeah, and it still probably needs a few more hundred, but...
You need your 1,000-round trigger. But still, though, you know, it seemed like it was smooth enough for me.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I liked it.
I couldn't tell the difference between my Gen 3 and the Gen 4.
Yeah.
But so it's all based on how the gun feels in your hand. That's one of the most important things. If the Gen 3 is too big, then maybe the Gen 4 is good for you.
Yeah.
If the Gen 3 is too small,
get
the larger backstrap.
Yeah. Well, now, okay, so Scott, you're used to shooting the Taurus.
Yes.
Now, but you got a chance to, I wish we would have let you shoot Damien's Gen 4 Glock, but what did you think of the Gen 4 Glock?
I fondled it. I put all three backstraps on there, and I really like the larger backstrap.
You like the biggest backstrap?
Even though... A lot of times I feel like I want to close my hand all the way to where my finger touches my thumb sort of thing, but I have better sight picture when my hand is as spread out as just about possible.
You know, I liked it too. I put you gave it to me after you put the largest backstrap on that Gen 4.
Mm-hmm.
And I like the way it feels. You know, Glocks, my hands are big enough. Glocks don't, you know, they fit me.
Mm-hmm.
They fit me, but okay, that was interesting. So what was your favorite part of this match?
Actually, there is no favorite part. They're all great. All the stages. It's just a learning experience and a lot of fun. So
it's definitely fun.
It's worth it. I mean, when my manager first showed me pictures of this sort of shooting, I looked at him and go, I can never do that. I'm a large guy and running from stage to stage, that ain't gonna work. But get out here, try it. It's a lot of fun.
You did a lot of fun. You shot pretty well today.
Thank you.
You know, I mean, when they throw up the scores, I think you're going to be ahead of me. Yeah. I had a bad day. I had that one stage.
If we take that one stage out of there, we might be close to even. But
I had that one stage killed me. I was just so sloppy, and that's the way it goes.
I find that I just got to slow down and focus, because you go fast, you screw up.
Yep. Damien, what are your final thoughts on this?
It's great. Like I said, I love the stage where you have to move while shooting. I don't do that enough, and it's a lot harder than it looks. Some of the guys were obviously seasoned veterans, so they were shooting a lot faster, moving a lot faster. I had to actually walk slower just to be able to hit the targets, but that's the purpose of coming out here. You can do things that you can't do at the square range. I got a chance to draw from my MTAC quite a bit.
How did that go? How did you like drawing from your MTAC? Because I used my MTAC holster today, too, inside the waistband, which is how I carry. Most of the time. What did you think?
Honestly, I think I draw faster through my MTAC than I did. When I went to my first IDPA match, I wasn't prepared, and somebody let me borrow a Glock 19 Serpa, where you got to press the button.
Mm-hmm.
I draw faster through my MTAC than one of those, even though it was inside the waistband. But I think with some more practice, coming out to more matches, I'll get better at it.
Now, what I like about what you did, Damien, you came out here dressed like you're going to work.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, you got a business casual shirt on. You came out with business slacks and business shoes. I like it. But, you know, this is how you are dressed most of the time when you carry, right?
That's exactly what I wanted to see. I wanted to see if I had to draw, God forbid I had to draw my gun for my MTAC holster, I wanted to see how well will I do it with the type of clothing that I have. The magazine, I got a pocket magazine pouch that I use from...
Did you reload from your pocket magazine pouch today?
Yes. It's definitely slower, but again, that's my situation. That's what I would have to do in real life, so it was good practice, and that's why I did it. So I came out here to really just train, not pay attention to my score.
Good.
Which is probably good, because I probably did a crappy. But I had fun.
I don't think it was that bad.
What's your final thoughts, Scott, on this?
Well, what you're saying about moving while shooting, a year ago when I started action pistol shooting, I noticed how sloppy I was hitting the targets while actually walking. But over the last year, I noticed that I can focus more while moving and actually hit things. So you do get better with practice on moving. So.
Yeah, and today was cool because we got a chance to shoot moving targets, shooting targets while we were
while
on the
moving.
Move. And shooting targets at different distances. Some stages had targets at 4 yards, and then the next array was at 10 yards, and the next array was at 7. So you got to adjust your shooting technique 3 times all in the same stage. And there were some stages where, remember the one where we had to shoot 3 targets, reload, three targets,
and
reload
again.
Yeah, which I screwed that up. I got a procedural because I forgot to reload for the second array of targets. But what did you think of that one, that stage?
You have to concentrate on what you're doing, because I thought it was pretty good, but I got on target to the second group of targets and realized I hadn't reloaded and did it real quick before I pulled the trigger.
I did what you almost did. You almost shot the second group of targets before reloading, which would have been a penalty.
Mm-hmm.
I did that.
Yeah.
So I got the penalty. I had a brain fade.
Yeah.
And it was like, but that was good because it makes you practice doing your reloads.
Mm-hmm.
You were reloading. You didn't wear cover, did you?
No, I didn't wear cover. And okay. I had magazine pouches off the belt.
Okay.
So not from pocket.
Anybody waiting for copies?
Oh, the scores are here. Okay, time to turn this off now. The scores are here. Huh, look at this. Hey, Damien. Damien,
we got the
scores here. Damien, you beat me. You beat me because of that one lousy stage. I had one stage where I had, like, you know, the way they score here, I had like 60 seconds worth of penalties. And that was because I was just way too sloppy. So good job. Scott, you did real well.
And I'll say one thing. I probably would have got more procedurals, but they knew I was a new guy. So when they saw me about to make a mistake, such as forgetting to reload, when even though I was not out of rounds, they will yell it at me.
Yeah.
So I think that helped me, because guarantee I would have got a lot more procedurals if it wasn't for that.
They did that to me a lot of times when I first started out too.
Yeah, so.
Reload, front target first or closest and all that. So yeah, they're very helpful out here.
Bob, when he forgot to reload, I didn't warn him at all. I would have got a procedural there.
Yeah,
the guy warned me.
Well, I had a bad day. I had one stage that really killed me. I had that one stage where I had like three or four failure to neutralize on the same stage. And the way they score a real world gun, an FTN, a failure to neutralize, is a 10-second penalty.
Heavy.
So that one stage, I got like 30 or 40 seconds added to my score simply because I had three FTNs. And that's what absolutely destroyed me. That's why I did real bad.
And the other thing I noticed too, since I was shooting slower, they had time to remind me to reload.
Yeah.
Some of you guys were shooting so fast that they couldn't get the word out of their mouth by the time you already had that round downrange. So that helped me too by going I was just really slow. So that worked out well.
You guys did good. You guys did real well.
But with practice comes speed.
Scott, you did well here, buddy.
What is that, number 9 or 10 on the list there?
5, 6, 7, 8. You're ninth. Ninth out of, looks like we had about 25 shooters. 29 shooters.
Yeah, 29 in our class. And it's good to see that you're actually progressing, that you're actually getting better at what you're doing.
Yeah, we had 31 shooters.
Yeah, but they were in a single stack.
We had a couple single stack shooters. Now, this is interesting. We had 29 double stack shooters and 2 single stack shooters. So I guess that kind of tells you the popularity of the different types of guns around here at this club anyway. Interesting stuff here.
It's a lot of fun out here.
It's more fun than a grown man ought to have.
I like it.
Thanks, guys, for your time.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
It was great.
I'm adding on to this because we got Chris here, and Chris is going to talk about USPSA. Now, he's going to be at the Double Tap Championship in June, which I'm going to shoot, and Steve Zoffi's going to be there, by the way.
Awesome.
And Rick Brenneman's coming down for that. So talk about what do you think's going to happen at that? How's that going to differ from the real-world gun match that we're shooting here?
Well, you know, the USPSA, it's more, like we talked about over on the range, more gaming sport, right?
Gaming.
Yeah, and gaming's okay.
Here comes the hate mail.
Hey, no. Gaming is okay in USPSA.
No, it's good, yeah.
It's two different things, right? So somebody that says, you know, oh, USPSA, that's not a real sport because if I shoot IDPA and, you know, that's a real-world gun, and if I'm in a real-world defensive situation, I can't go by those rules. Well, of course you can't.
Yeah.
Nobody would, right? If I'm getting shot at, trust me, I'm shooting back and I'm hiding.
That's right.
Right? But in USPSA, it's all about how fast can you shoot and how accurate, right? And there are a lot of different ways to
do
it.
Nothing wrong with speed and accuracy.
Absolutely. It's just another version of the sport, right?
Yeah.
You know, it's just like, you know, stock cars versus drag racing, right? It's just another version of a cool sport. So you shouldn't really look at it that way.
True.
But Damien's really, you know, smart, and I do the same thing when I shoot real-world gun or IDPA. I do it with a mindset of self-defense, right? Because that's really kind of what it's built for. But USPSA is a ton of fun. I think it's easier, personally, because it's just more running and gunning. You don't have to think about as many rules. You know, you can, you know, depending on your class, right? I mean, sometimes I shoot production. Mostly I shoot production.
Are you going to shoot production this summer?
Probably, yeah.
I'll match?
Yeah, I'll shoot production at Double Tack this year. But I'm
what are you going to shoot?
I've got a Glock 34.
That's what I'll bring.
So I've got, you know, I've got a 34. I've got, you know, it'll hold 17 rounds, but production, you only stack 10.
Oh,
right?
Yeah, 10 plus
10, 10, you know, plus your Barney. But you can carry 20 magazines on your belt, right? I mean, drop them as fast as you can reload them, right?
So yeah, you know, and you can put the magazines more towards the center of your body.
Right.
You can put your magazines
in. Yeah, right in front of your hip bone.
Forward of your hip. Yeah.
Forward of your hip bone all the way around, right? Yeah. All the way back. So you can carry as many as you want, which lets you strategize, right?
Right.
Because, you know, if you've got, you never want to make a flat-footed reload, right, in USPSA. So if you've got two shots here and you've got to run across the alley to take four shots there and, you know, or six shots there, I mean, you can drop that mag. Drop it and make a reload on the run. Just leave those around.
And you can drop the magazine with ammo in it.
Absolutely.
Which I'm a big fan of doing.
Yeah.
I know some people might disagree, but I'm a fan of doing that.
But, you know, I mean, and it's kind of interesting because a lot of times, you know, when I carry, I actually carry a Kimber Officer CDP-2, right? Officer model. So it's a 7 plus 1.
Oh, wait, your Kimber stack. Officer is a 3.5 barrel? 3.5 inch
barrel?
Well,
it's a 4-inch barrel.
4-inch barrel.
Yeah.
Okay.
But it's an officer grip, so it only holds 7 rounds, 45.
Okay.
Plus 1 in the pipe. So if, you know, in a defensive situation, if you have a chance to reload, right? If I shoot four rounds, I've only got four left, right? If I have a chance to reload, I would do it, but I'm keeping those four rounds because I only carry one extra mag.
Yeah, because you don't have that much ammo.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So that's real-world gun, right? And that's the difference between that and USPSA, whereas I'm strategizing my fastest way to shoot most accurately all the targets on the course, right? So it's just, I mean, it's fun. It's so much fun.
Yeah, it is a lot of fun, and that's, you know, I don't like the arguments of which is better. Oh, IDPA is better, USPSA is better, real world gun's better.
I don't think there's one better than the other. I think they're just different.
Yeah,
it's
and
what
you should
like.
Learn all three, Absolutely. And you should also take, you know, close range gunfighting like some of us are taking, or tactical response, or front sight, or Tiger McKee's class.
Absolutely.
You know, that he teaches. I mean, there's so many good ones out there.
Yeah. Yeah. And the interesting thing, you know, the steel, the pop up you shot, right? In this match here, if I'm not mistaken, your shoot target pops up, and then immediately a no shoot pops in front of it, right?
No, not today.
Oh, what, a no
not
shoot?
Today.
Okay.
Not today.
Okay.
Today it was you shoot the steel, and as soon as the steel drops, the two targets come, they fall down, show themselves to you for about
turners.
A second.
Yeah.
They're turners. They show
turners. Okay.
Themselves, and that's when you
got
to pop them twice, and then they disappear.
Yeah. Those are fun.
Then they go to the side
those
and they
are
disappear.
Yeah, that's not as bad as the pop-ups, right? The bear traps.
Yeah.
Bear trap, you've got a target that's, it's a split target, so it's laying flat front and back, and when you shoot the steel, the back one pops up, that's your shoot target, and you've got about 2 seconds to put two rounds in it. Then a no-shoot pops up right in front of it.
So if you're too late, you're
going
to hit the no-shoot.
Still shooting, right? Still squeezing that trigger? That no-shoot pops up.
I like the fact that you said squeeze the trigger.
Yeah, you don't
Did you pick up on that?
Squeeze that trigger.
You pick up on that?
Even running and gunning, you're squeezing that trigger.
Yep,
yeah. Yeah, if you're not, you're not very accurate.
Yeah, that's true.
Good.
So how do you like carrying that? I'm just curious. How do you like carrying that Kimber officer model?
I love it. And see, and people get on to me about you shouldn't have two types of systems. Right?
I was going to ask you about that. You have two different types of weapon systems. How does
that
work?
It works great for me because I practice with them both a lot. Yeah. Right. So I know, you know, I mean, you definitely got to get in the mindset, right? Because I mean, I have a mental drill that, you know, when I carry and I put on my carry gun, it's a different drill than when I load up to shoot USPSA, or if I'm shooting IDPA with my 34, because sometimes I do that, right, just to do it.
And I have heard that. I'm glad you brought that up. I've heard people say, and even I've said it sometimes, you know, stick with the same weapons platform. Probably for someone, if you're not going to practice with both,
yeah,
that's probably important. But you right. practice a lot.
Practice a lot. I probably...
how many rounds do you shoot on the average every month?
Anywhere... Well, you know, it varies. Some months are better than others. I'll tell you this, anywhere from 500 to 1,000.
That's pretty yeah. good.
But I live 6 miles from this range, and I'm a member. And I've got a very flexible schedule.
It helps, doesn't
that
it?
Helps yeah. a lot.
So I come out a lot during the day, and it's like nobody here. Destiny.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Yeah, and you know, here at Dallas Pistol Club, I have to compliment them. They've got a really good facility, and if you're a member, you come out here in the middle of the day, you can set up the targets any way you want,
yep.
and shoot them any way you want.
Yeah,
that's cool.
Yeah, and I'm still learning a lot too, right? Because I mean, I've been shooting all my life, but as far as and
wait, you've been shooting all your life and you got stuff to learn?
Oh, dude. Well, I mean,
what do you mean?
I grew up with guns, grew up hunting, so I was always a safe shooter and a pretty good shooter as long as I'm shooting at a bullseye target, right?
Yeah.
All the time in the world. Then you start putting the speed factor of the sport on it, and it's a whole new world, right? And I've only been doing this not even 2 years. And
you mean competition shooting
like this. And so I'm still learning a whole lot. And these guys have done tons to help me. And every match I'm getting better and better. In fact, this is my steel match here. That's actually why I came up here, was just to grab these results. And this is the best I've ever done. I was 16 out of 37.
Was this last week's?
Yeah, last week's.
Where am I on there? Scott R.
Where's Scott Ray? There he
is. Scott Ray, 18.
18?
Okay.
Good job.
Awesome.
Good job.
I didn't get you by
good
much,
job.
Man.
You know, you guys, I'm getting jealous here. You guys are smoking me, and I've been doing this for about 6 years. So I got to... Well, I'm out of practice. I'm rusty. I haven't...
Yeah.
I'm not getting out here like I should.
And see, the steel, right, the steel matches, that's a whole different game again.
Yeah.
Right? Because you stand in a box.
I haven't shot steel in a while.
It's strictly speed shooting, and the targets are, depending on who's setting the match up, right, the targets are fairly large, and so you get a rhythm and a cadence down. You do it five times in a row, right, five strings. And so you learn to get good at that way. But you know what? You're never going to have, you know, five bad guys standing up there, you know, being still spaced out perfectly.
And you don't get to shoot them five times.
Right?
You don't get to shoot them
five practice shots before you, right? It's just a different version on the sport of shooting. Yeah. I love it.
So I prefer the personal protection match and the real world match, right, because of the move and all the variety of targets. It's
yeah.
not just yeah. a static stand in the box and shoot however it's set up. I like those two matches that they offer here a lot.
Yeah. Yeah, and I like their scoring system here too. You know, their scoring system here is very unique compared to USPSA and IDPA. Here you had to score 8 points on a target to neutralize it, which means to do that you had to put two rounds in the four ring or smaller.
Right.
And the four ring is, I would say, probably about 10 inches. And that might sound easy to people that are listening to this, but it's not as easy as you might think when you're on the move.
Right.
And if you don't put two in that ring, you have a failure to neutralize. And that happened to me on three or four targets on one stage. I got too sloppy, and I had a four, and I had a three, which was 7 points. And I didn't neutralize it. So they gave me a 10-second penalty for each one.
And a lot of times, sometimes, you know, and this is part of the strategy too, which in IDPK, right, in IDPA, you don't really think this type of strategy through. But a lot of times, the guys will just put three rounds in those, right? Because three rounds anywhere, and you've got your points to neutralize.
Yes.
But then that affects your reloads.
Yes, right? It makes you have to reload more.
Exactly. So, you know.
But on that stage, I wish I would have put three rounds in those.
You can.
Because I took 40 seconds worth of penalties. Mm-hmm. If I would have shot an extra time on each one, that wouldn't have taken 40 seconds.
And you can put three in the paper real fast without caring where they go.
Oh, yeah, I can put three on the paper real fast.
Yeah.
So I wasn't thinking.
Yeah.
The whole thing that killed me on that stage was it was a mental brain fart because I wasn't thinking about what I should have been doing.
Yeah.
That's
of course, you know, I can sit here and talk all this because it's in my head great,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
But when I'm out on the range, dude, I'm one of the worst.
I'm
telling you, I make mistakes, I get procedural.
Something happens when the buzzer goes off. Our brains turn into mush.
Yeah.
You never notice that?
Yeah. And there are a number of shooters out there who shoot three on every target.
There is a level of stress. It's not the same stress you would experience in the real world if someone attacked you. But when that guy's sitting behind you, staring you down, are you ready? The gun, your shooter's ready, and you're like, yeah, I'm ready. And you're thinking to yourself, am I ready? And you hear that buzzer, beep, and everybody's staring at you. They got a whole crowd. I mean,
yeah, everybody's really watching you. Yeah. That's stress, I mean, too.
It's a certain level of stress that's actually good for you. Mm-hmm. You know, I wish they had a stage where they make us do a bunch of push-ups and jumping jacks before we shot.
Don't get our blood boiling.
Get our blood boiling. No.
Yeah, there needs to be a stage where, you know, at the sound of the buzzer, Drop down and give me 10 push-ups first, then stand up, draw your gun.
And it doesn't matter what it is. We'll just get your heart rate up to a certain,
jumping jacks.
110.
You know, seriously, that would be a good stage.
It is, right?
And well, they have had stages where they'll have, you start at one side of the bay, run over to the other side, and then start shooting. They have done that before.
Yeah, but you're right, Damien, man. When that buzzer starts, you realize how much you have to learn, and dude, I'm telling you.
Do you guys actually hear your shots go off when you pull the trigger?
Sometimes I do and sometimes I don't.
Because I rarely ever hear mine. I'm just concentrating on the targets. When I'm shooting steel, I'm not even sure if I hit it because I can't really hear if it's...
Oh, I can hear the steel.
I don't hear the steel all the time either. So, although when I'm in the background watching people shoot, I can hear it every time. But when I'm actually up there shooting, I rarely hear it.
But I think the only reason I hear it is because I'm counting my shots.
Are you calling your shots, too?
Well, I don't know about calling them, but I'm counting. I mean, I try, right? Because I go for center mass, you know, and try and get the points that way. So, you know, I try, but I'm definitely counting, you know, because that's kind of how I learned doing it for my reloads.
Go ahead. I heard Steve Zolfi talk about calling your shots, and it just makes all the sense in the world. But man, is it hard!
Well, I since Steve and I have been talking about calling your shots, you know, I've been practicing it. There was one stage today where I wasn't looking for holes in the target, which you shouldn't do. I was just watching that front sight, watching how it aligned with the rear sight, and calling my shots. And I did well. Didn't have a failure to neutralize on the whole stage. That was the one. That was the one where we had the what do you call them?
The flippers.
The flippers. Yeah. Of course, on the flipper targets, I wasn't even looking at my sights.
Yeah.
But after that, the next targets, I was just calling my shots on the rest of that stage, and it worked out. It really did. It worked out.
Yeah.
You know, it's an art. It's tough to learn.
I think in some targets I was calling my shots, but then as I turned to the other target, I peeked to see, make sure I had holes in it. So that's not very productive.
Well, but sometimes that's not a bad idea because then you can go back and make it up if you missed it. Yeah, if you missed it, you can go back and make up the shot.
Because it doesn't take you 10 seconds to check.
Glance over and see if there's actually extra holes in there.
Yeah, and that's the thing about this match that I really like is penalties are 10 seconds. I mean, failures to neutralize. And so it really...
They add up.
Well, no kidding they add up. They destroyed me. They destroyed me today. And so it really makes you concentrate on neutralizing a target. And that's why, you know, that's real world gun.
Right.
That's real life. Because if you just put one shot on the bad guy, you might not neutralize him.
Right.
So I think you should get a 10-second penalty because... You know, in a real life situation, a failure to neutralize, that penalty could be your life.
Exactly. Yep. Yeah, absolutely.
Here, I'll take 10 seconds.
Yeah.
You know, in real life, it could be my life that's gone, and that's so. When I look at this score, I'm thinking, well, I stunk today, but I got better at remembering to neutralize targets, and that's something that I want to stick in my head.
Yeah.
What do you think, Jamie?
No, absolutely. Since I was going slower than most. I shot two shots for most of my targets, but because I knew I had a score, I had to neutralize the target, I took more time making sure they were good shots.
Yeah.
Now, of course, with time you get faster, but I wasn't ready to go faster, but it made me think about good shot placement, not just...
And that's what it's all about. Yeah. It's all about shot placement.
Exactly. Yeah, because if you think about it, you know, think about shooting on a barricade where you're slicing the pie, right? So you've got three, foes. You got three foes. So you start from the outside in, right? And you shoot this first guy on the far outside. You move around the barricade a little to take your second target. if you haven't neutralized that first one, he's actually still shooting.
He's still shooting at you.
Right? So you could still be behind that barricade blocking the second target from shooting while you work on neutralizing him. So you got to think, is he neutralized?
Right.
Before you move on to your next target.
Yeah.
Right?
You can't miss a target too fast.
That's the design of this. Yeah.
Yeah.
And yeah, that's, you know, you'll hear this a lot. You can't miss fast enough get a good score.
That's true. You can't miss fast enough.
And trust me, I can miss so fast.
Hey, I think I'm the world's fastest misser.
We haven't shot a lot together, but I have some good records going there, too.
You can't miss fast.
Are you a fast misser?
I'm a fast misser.
I think, really, when it comes down to it, everybody is a real fast misser.
I think I'll focus on being a slow hitter first,
and then that's a good strategy.
Then I'll try to get fast.
All right, thanks, guys. This was good.
All right, appreciate it, Bob.
You're about to learn concealed carry secrets that most Americans will never know. With your free subscription to Concealed Carry Report, you will learn how to select the best carry holster, how to know when it's okay to use deadly force, self-defense video of the week, situational awareness tips from fellow subscribers who've had to defend themselves, politically incorrect commentary, unbiased product and gear reviews. Go to www.gunrightsradio.com/US. CCA and sign up for your free subscription to Concealed Carry Report.
Okay, hope you enjoyed that. I'm looking forward to shooting Scott's 24/7 Taurus pistol. I've never had a chance to shoot it. Now, you know what? I've seen him use it two or three times now in shooting matches, and I got to say, folks, it's performed well. So I'm a big fan of whatever works for you. I'm not going to say you have to have one certain type of pistol. I'm not that arrogant, folks. You know, if you shoot something well, and it works for you, and it's reliable, and it's accurate enough, and it does what you want it to do, then just practice it. Just give it a 1,000-round trigger job if you haven't yet. Remember, all pistols need a 1,000-round trigger job. They all, isn't it amazing? They all work better. They all shoot better. They're all more accurate, and all of them have better triggers after a 1,000-round trigger job. Trust me on that. So I'm looking forward to shooting this Taurus pistol, and I will give a good, honest review. By the time you hear the next podcast, I will have had a chance to go out and shoot that pistol, and so I'll give a review in the next show on Scott's Taurus 24/7 9mm. All right, let's get to a little bit of listener feedback here before I let you go. I want to talk about an email that I got from Bernie in Phoenix, Arizona, and he said, Bob, don't hold it against me, but I bought a Smith & Wesson M&P 9mm. Bernie, I don't hold it against you. Hey, everybody knows I like Glocks. It's just because they work for me. No, folks, I'm not a Glock fanboy. I'm just a guy that tells you that they work for me, but it doesn't mean that you have to have them. If they don't work for you, then they don't work for you. So good job buying your M&P 9mm, Bernie. That's great. One of the things I like about it, about what he said here in his email, is he says he went out and he rented a bunch of guns before he purchased it. And he said he says, I think that's the only way that you can buy a gun, is to go out and rent a bunch first. So I agree with you, Bernie, 100%. Thanks for sending that in. Okay, now, I get another email from, let's see, who sent me this? The person's from JC from Long Island, New York. And he was sharing with me about some of the oppressive gun laws in New York. Some of the things you have to go through. I mean, my God, you got to sell your soul in New York to be able to own a gun and forget about carrying it. You know, as they say in New York, forget about it. You're not going to be able to carry in New York unless... unless you have some serious connections or you know what buttons to push with the local politicians, I guess. It's insane. You know, just when I start to complain about, you know, things, the way that they run things here in Texas, man, maybe I ought to keep my mouth shut. You know, maybe I ought to realize how good I've got it here in Texas. We're such a gun-friendly state. When I start reading stories about what people in New York have to go through to be able to even own a gun, buy a gun, much less carry it. It's insane. I mean, I feel sorry for the residents there. They're being denied the right to protect themselves adequately. And that's just not right. But JC wanted to know my thoughts on using something like a Ruger 22 caliber pistol as a trainer for a 1911 type shooter, or should he buy a 22 conversion for the gun he has? Like, for example, buying a Glock 22 conversion kit. Well, my thoughts on that is, first of all, I would recommend buying a 22 caliber conversion for the gun that you typically like to shoot. That way you've got the same trigger pull, pretty much, or pretty close to the same trigger pull. You have the same feel to the gun. You got the same sights. You have the same everything. The only difference is you're shooting a different caliber with a different capacity. Otherwise, everything else is the same. If you're going to train with a 22, my vote would be to get a 22 caliber conversion kit. And you can get them for 1911s and Glocks. I think they even make them for M&Ps now. I'm not sure. And XDs. Somebody help me out on that. If they don't make them for M&Ps and XDs, correct me. Get on the Gun Rights Radio Network forum or put a comment in the comment section here for this show posting and let me know. But that would be the best way to go. I've also wondered why people like to call those Ruger pistols, those Ruger 22 pistols, as good guns to train with if you're going to shoot a 1911. Have you ever looked at the grip of a Ruger Mark III, for example? Now, I know that people make a big deal about grip angle. And grip angle was one of those subjects that John Hottaway and I talked about last week that doesn't matter. It just simply doesn't matter. So maybe I ought to be careful when I say this, but have you ever looked at the grip angle of a Ruger Mark III? It's more Glockish than it is 1911-ish, isn't it? I mean, that's what I've noticed. Of course, you know, I know John Hottaway's listening to this. Hey, John, guess what? I know grip angle doesn't matter. But I just wanted to point that out to people. But in terms of JC's question from New York, get the 22 conversion for the gun that you typically shoot. That's what I would recommend, because everything else about the gun is going to be real familiar to you, and that's a good way to train, in my humble opinion. Okay, next up is Dean from right here in the Dallas area. I know Dean. Dean and I go to church together, and Dean wrote to me, and he said that I've mentioned DVD training when he and I were visiting the other day, because I got a chance to spend some one-on-one personal face-to-face time with Dean from Dallas. He says, consider me a guy on a limited budget, so he wanted to know what kind of DVD training that I think that he should be watching. You know, pick one. Dean, just pick one. They're all good. I mean, you know, pick a Suarez DVD, pick a Masada Yub DVD, I mean, pick a... I think Tiger McKee puts them out. His are good. James Yeager, Tactical Response. You know, I have to say, I have never spent a lot of time watching shooting DVDs. So I'm going to be very careful here about what I recommend. I threw some names out there because that's what I've heard other people say are good DVDs. You know, the Magpul DVDs are good and so forth. Just be careful, Dean. Don't substitute DVDs for real training. I got to say that, okay? It's not real training. If it's all you can do right now, then I understand. If because of budget reasons that's all you can afford, you know, that's better than not studying the shooting art at all, I would say. And that's better than not doing anything. But I just have to be careful to let you know that I don't have personal experience. And most of you know, I don't like to talk about guns, training, accessories, ammo, or things that I haven't shot or owned or used. I just don't like to do that. I know, you know, and I appreciate you guys asking me for my opinion. It's very flattering. So please don't get angry with me if I say to you, hey, you know what? I don't know. I can't give you a comment on that because I've never experienced it. It's just kind of one of my self-imposed rules. I guess maybe it's just irritating to me when I hear somebody else critique a gun or ammo or some type of an accessory or something like that, and then come to find out they don't own it or they've never really spent much time using it. That just bothers me. What about you? Does that irritate you? I just don't want to. That's, you know, kind of one of my self-imposed rules. I just don't like to do that. But Dean, get some good DVDs, a couple of them from some good training schools, and I think you'll learn some good stuff. Thanks for that question, buddy. I appreciate it. Oh, you know what? One more thing. Dean also sent me another email about some sight paint. Apparently, and I'm going to put a link to this in the show notes, apparently there is some good sight paint out there. Like, for example, if you have a Kel-Tec P3AT or a Ruger LCP, you know, where they practically don't have any sights, I guess he's found some sight paint that does illuminate itself in low light conditions. And he uses that on his Kel-Tec P3AT. So I'll put a link in that. You might want to check that out if some of you are complaining about the fact. And you know what? And John Hadaway corrected me. I thought in the last podcast that maybe sights might be one of those things that just don't matter. But after doing that interview with John and thinking about it, yeah, I would say sights matter. They matter a little bit. I think people do place too much importance on sights. But they matter. So if you have a P3AT or an LCP, with basically no sights, because, I mean, I know they call those things sights, but that's not, those aren't really sights. Maybe this sight paint will help. So I'll put Dean's link to that sight paint in the show notes. Okay, so that's going to wrap up the listener emails for right now. I just want to say this, folks. If you have not had a chance yet to invest in version 2 of my Shooters Club premium podcast, some people have been giving me some very good reviews on that. There's some funny stuff in there, too, folks. There's some pretty funny stuff. Steve Zofi and I had a couple of moments there that were hilarious. And when I went back and listened to it before I actually published it, even though I did the interview firsthand with Steve, I started laughing like crazy, especially about the sugar packets. And that's all I'm going to say. It's about the sugar packets. You just have to get it. So support my show. It's only $15, a couple hours worth of good stuff on there. Most of it has not been covered on the Handgun World show. Just go to handgunworld.com and click the Shooters Club podcast link, and you'll be able to see how to get your copy. All right, that is it, folks. Thanks again for listening to episode 116 of the Handgun World Show. My name is Bob Main. The reason I carry a gun is because I can't carry a cop. So thanks for listening again, and safe shooting, everybody. I'll catch you next time. Goodbye.